Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors. Wherever you are in the world, welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 229, I was very lucky to have, honored to have, Alora Lovelight on the podcast. She is an R&B artist. We talked about a number of different things. We talked about how she got started, how she was like taking advantage of her boss's studio when she was doing film scores, which was worth $1 million. And like, oh my Lord, being in the studio costs a lot of money, let's just say that. But yeah, we also talked about how she's like developed her talents over the years, and yeah, how she's worked on some of her mental fortitude. All in all, it was a great podcast. I really enjoyed my time talking to her, and I look forward to talking to her in the future. So please sit back, enjoy the podcast, and yeah, let's do this. Ha ha. Peace. Ha ha ha. Oh. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 229, I'm very lucky to have, oh, thank you very much, my lady. I'm very happy to have Alora Lovelight on the podcast today. She's an R&B singer, as well as, how can I put it? She does a course or two in her time as well. Alora, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure's all mine. The pleasure's all mine. I am curious. Like, okay, how did you get into the realm of music? How did it all kick off?
Well, I often tell people that music chose me and not the other way around. My story is that my mother is a fantastic piano player, and she was like an accompanist for a choir, and she played all through her pregnancy with me, and then here I am in the world, and I started playing piano shortly after that. And it's been my whole life forever, since I can remember. I started playing the piano when I was 4. And then when I was about 12 or 13, I was like on a path where I could really study piano, or I could study like all other areas. And songwriting was like always kind of near and dear to my heart. I was like that kid who was writing songs in my room with my guitar. And so, yeah, at that age, I branched out. I started learning guitar. I started learning violin. I was just really curious about like how the technical side of music work. You know, how do the instruments work? How do they work together? All of that was really intriguing to me. My mom always tells people, like, I was never a kid that like banged on the keys of the piano. I always like was really interested in how it sounded and what they each sounded like. And then I was in high school, and she was like, what do you want to study after high school? And I was like, not music. I don't want to do music. That's a hobby, and blah, blah, blah. And then it was like time for college applications. And it was like, what else am I good at? So yeah, I ended up going to school for music, and I studied music composition. And so I have a degree in like really how to write music, which is really my favorite thing ever. And then I went to LA and I worked for a film composer, and I wrote music for film, and it was a long career ahead if I was going to really stay the course in film music, which I really still love. It's still a passion of mine. But at that point I decided, you know, let me try my own artistry, and that's kind of here we are.
Like, look, this is the thing. Yeah, seems to have the sort of a little bit of the flair of Prince about you, learning.
Yes, I've been told that, and that is such a compliment. Yes.
Yeah, because like this is the thing. The piano is not an easy thing, like, to learn. And like, look, I don't play the guitar, but people are going, you can learn the guitar easy. And like, yeah, I don't know about that, but violin is also not an easy instrument to like pick up as well. So you're like doing 3 different instruments, like, yeah, you're writing music, and you decide to go to college, ending up like basically doing like film scores. And like, yeah, so you, like, don't get me wrong. Now you can make a very good career for yourself doing film scores. But what was the sort of like, the drive for you, the sort of that epiphanal moment to like, oh, you know what? I'm done with film scores. Time to shine, baby girl. Time to shine.
Yeah, right. a few things. I had worked for like an A-list Hollywood film composer, and he had like a $1 million studio. They had a grand piano. There was 3 different studios, A, B, and C. All the equipment, all the microphones, he was like a collector of native instruments. So everybody would send, like fans would send him musical instruments. And I, being who I, you know, the way I am, I was so like, what's this? How does this work? And he one day, very early on, had said to me, if you ever want to record, just like go ahead downstairs. And I was like, say no more. So yeah, right. And so I would go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I was the office assistant, so I had keys to everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I would go and I would work and I would, you know, answer the phone and all of that. And then at 6 o'clock I would lock up when everybody left, and I would go downstairs and I would record till like 3 o'clock in the morning on my own stuff. And that's when I was like, oh, I really love this, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you, because like, this is the thing, I know a little bit, like minuscule bit about the whole musical industry, right? So I'm no expert by all means. But one of the things which like, always screams out when you ever see a documentary, when you ever talk about this, stuff like this, studio time is hella expensive. So it's like, no, so to go, I've got the run of this place from like 9 till, from 6 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, that's where I was sitting at, I distinctly remember sitting at the computer at 4 a.m. one day and being like, I don't have to be here. But I was just like, so like you said, what an opportunity. I mean, that studio gets rented out for like probably $250 an hour. I mean, it was like, I should be here every hour I can be, because, you know, I made a whole studio album while I was working there. Exactly. Yeah, because I was like, why not, you know?
No, but this is an opportunity. Yeah. Now, how long ago was that, may I ask?
That was 2013.
Okay, so like basically a healthy chunk of time of 9 years have gone by.
Yeah.
So like, okay, like, so going from sort of like the creme de la creme of studio equipment, like how, and I imagine like you've most probably seen all types of different recording environments in your time. Like,
yes.
Yeah, does it really make a major difference with today's technology?
It's hard to say, because the advancement of music technology in the last 9 years is like astronomical. It's so advanced compared to when I was working on film scores. I had started like very, very early on. I had started working on a program called Digital Performer, which I don't even know if anybody uses anymore, but you know, back then it was like the program, we were using great programs, but they weren't like giving you chord progressions, and they weren't giving you like, nowadays, you know, I always talk about in an interview about how I thought that the prerequisite for coming into the music industry was like knowing all that stuff, but it's definitely not, especially nowadays, because I'm like, you know, I'll be in a studio session, and I'm like, how did you know that that was in the same key? And they're like, oh, they match. The colors match. And I'm like, oh. The
colors match.
My degree is worthless.
Yes, I go, how did you
know? I'm like, okay. Well, I studied music for 20 years.
I could just see your face. I was like, yeah, the colors match.
I'm like, what do you mean? And then I'll be in a session, right? And then I'll be like, oh, that's out of pitch. It should be a B flat. It's a B. And people look at me like I have 6 heads. And I'm like, that's music, guys.
No, I think this is the thing. Look, music this day and age with regards to all the stuff which is out there. Look, the new Mac Studio, which has come out, which they've like been like, if you've watched anything about tech YouTube, it's everywhere. And yeah. You're talking all of this equipment, programs, Appleton, like, you know what I mean, Logic. And you're like, all right, it's easier today to make music or come up with music than ever before.
Yeah.
But this, like, your sort of old school training where you're like, that's a B minus. it's like it needs to be a B, or like you guys said, hear it there and there. I think some of that sort of art has been lost on us, not all of everyone, but on certain parts of like the next generation coming up.
Yes, because, you know, like we, I think more and more live in a time of instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And music theory is incredibly advanced. Like music theory, I've studied music theory for many, many years, and there is so many layers to understanding the techniques of putting instruments together and making sure they're in the right key and all of that. So it's like the programming and all the technology is fantastic. It offers, you know, it does offer a vehicle for people to kind of jumpstart that, right?
Yeah.
But then, for example, like I've been in a session before where, you know, they don't know that, like how to put it on the grid in the session, or they don't know how to use the metronome. And mm-hmm. it's like, then the work is 3-4 times as much because if it gets thrown off, they don't know how to fix it. And so that's something that, like with my courses and stuff, I try to share information like that, because I realize it's such a valuable thing that I have studied music and not everybody has. And there's a lot of information to sift through. So I think that people can get overwhelmed, you know, about, I can't learn all of that. It's a lot of information.
Yeah. Like this is the thing, I think with a lot of it, and like, this is like purely from outside observer's view, like, because like back in the day, if you were like, if you joined the band, if you were like, you know, up and coming artists, whatnot, you had like band road experience, like live performing experience, which you like picked up little tips and tricks and everything like this. You had to do things all by ear, so you can like do the sort of like, okay, digital fix, or like do like as quick. You had to go through a lot more of the journey of the music, whereas I would say today it's a little bit more rough and ready. Don't get me wrong, there is a lot of skill behind that, but it comes to, like, they put something together, but it's like there's a lot of the heavy lifting has been done elsewhere. Yes. And so, like, yeah, they miss out on that, you know?
Right. And I think that, like, especially, like I said, in this day and age that we live in, where, you know, you can post on social media and you can take 37 selfies and pick the right one and then you put it up. It's the same thing with music, where it's like people have the opportunity to, you know, cheat codes and use samples and all of that stuff, which there's a space for. But it's like, I always encourage people to learn as you go, you know, mm-hmm. like, why does that work like that? Why does that? Because I never want to be in a situation where it's like, I don't know how to fix that, or I don't know why that's off, or, you know.
Yeah, no, because this is the thing, you are coming from it, like, okay, as much as you've like dropped into the genre of like R&B and everything like this, like, you're still coming from it from a slightly different angle, because, okay, if you're doing a film score, okay, now, like, Chase, like, depending what movie it is, like, the tempo can be one way or the other. And then, like, even in the same movie, it's going all over the place, and you're trying to, like, okay, work out how to build and construct that on a regular basis, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel very thankful that being thrown into that, you know, like, I have a degree in music. Yeah. I probably learned equally as much working out of that studio, because, you know, I joke with people, like, I recorded a whole studio album there, but I would say at least 50% of the time was me being like, how does this program work? Where does this mic plug in? Like, all of that stuff. So it was a, like, throw you into the deep end, hands-on experience to learn not only, you know, I had the musical knowledge, but then it offered me the opportunity to learn programming, learn engineering, learn how to set up a room, all of those things that I'm very thankful for.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, okay, geez, like, being the million-dollar studio without, like, just by yourself, without a sound engineer.
Yeah. Okay. Very intimidating.
Yeah, because yeah. I've seen some of those desks, and you're like, oh,
what? Where? Right. This goes volume. I think it's volume, right?
Like, why do I sound like a robot? I don't know.
Yeah, why is that not recording? I go in, and it's like, oh, one, you know, there's no recording. I did a whole track, and it's like, but it was so good for me. And I think back to kind of what you were saying is that that's like a lost art now. Like, people don't really have to figure those things out on a, you know, and I had a major opportunity of being in a big, huge studio.
Yeah.
Like, that was just a huge opportunity. And I took full advantage to learn as much as I could. But I agree with you. I think that there's a missing, lost art form of, you know, what a blessing that we can plug our laptop in and drag some samples in that match the colors and it sound like you're Timbaland. Like, that's dope. But it's also like, okay, let's have longevity. Like, let's learn, you know, really about the music. And lots of people are very successful and they don't know a lick about the techniques of music and they don't need to. They're cashing their checks. So whatever.
But like, this is the thing. Like, when, like, I know it's been 9 years, but like, with that sort of 9 years, like, what would you say has changed when you sort of first started to get into the whole realm of I'm a musician, I'm in the realm of the music world to now, apart from the technology side?
So many things, everything, honestly. I think that change for myself or changed in terms of, I mean, the answer to both is everything. But I think for the industry, I think, again, it's kind of twofold, where it's like you have opportunities to be heard much easier than 9 years ago. 9 years ago, I did have to go make a studio album, make a demo, shop it around. That was, you know, like, that was still a thing. Nowadays, people get on TikTok, they put their song on, and then, you know, sometimes it blows up and they get a deal. That really does happen. But it's like, sometimes that will happen to artists who is not developed, is not ready, all of those things, because there is this instant gratification. So you can post it on TikTok and blow up and get a record deal. And it's like, well, wait a second. I don't know anything about contracts. I don't know anything about my artistry. I don't know anything about my brand. And so you're seeing a lot less, I think a lot less artists are lasting 20 years. You know, Alicia Keys just put out her fifth studio album after her 20-year contract.
Yeah.
People aren't really doing that anymore. You know, people are doing they're having a hit and then there's a turnover and there, you know, there's more recycling that's happening, but a lot of artists are being independent now. So I think, you know, there's a lot of changes that have happened. Myself as an artist has totally changed, because I think if you're not changing with everything else that's changing, you're going to get left behind. And I think that I got stuck in that for a little bit, to say, well, I'm not going to change. I'm really good at music and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, nobody cares. Like, that's not a thing.
I'm a, like, musician, you know? That's
yeah, nice. Good for you. Right. What do you want? Yeah. Like,
that's nice. Oh. But where do you perform? Right. I perform in clubs and on stage. Oh, that's brilliant. Here's a sweetie. Off you go.
Seriously. No, seriously. And it's like, you have to learn. Like, I'm finding that starting to be on social media more, because that's the wave, and starting to do covers, even though I write my own music, like, I'm finding myself, as I'm kind of moving with the tides of the industry, then I get the opportunity to be in a room and really know about music. And that's when the opportunity is like, Alora, do you know how to, why don't you play this or put this piano line in? Or that's where my opportunity comes, because I do know how to do that stuff. But I thought it was the other way around for a really long time. I thought that was going to get me in the door. And actually, it's what keeps me in the door.
No, like, this is the thing. I think one of the problems with, like, I think, well, when you talk about the sort of instant gratification, like, side of things in life in general, our whole society as a whole, you're just like, okay, if you use, you mentioned TikTok, okay, yes, you can blow up in TikTok and you're like, yeah, you're like instant famous and you're going at it. But many of the people, I would say, apart from, okay, I'm going to say Lil Nas X might be the exception to the rule with this. They don't have their sort of 10, like, it's not even 10,000 hours, that sort of 5 to 6,000 hours of just that grind to get them to that position. Because, like, when you listen to most people when they first, like, fresh, new on the stage, they like this overnight sensation. Yeah, no, there is not, like, no, they've done several hours of work and, like, many months, many years to get where they are. And depending where you meet them, it might be 5,000 hours into their journey. You're like, okay. And then when you get there to that 10,000 hours, you're like, oh my God, you're amazing. I remember when I heard you then, you're amazing now. Yeah. And then you get, okay, for example, Michael Jackson when he was fully grown. Now, look, Michael Jackson, when it was like Michael Jackson and Jackson 5, he put in these 10,000 hours. And then when he did Off the Wall, it was like, where the hell did you come from?
King of Pop. How did that happen? Right.
Yeah. And, like, if you, like, use the example of Prince, like, beforehand, he did hours. Like, I remember he worked as a janitor in a studio and, like, basically he was so gifted with music, like, across the board. It was like, boom, stepped into it. It's like, I think that's where I think a number of people, when they blow up on sort of TikTok, they don't have the longevity because they haven't had the time to develop at all.
And I think it's unfortunate that I don't see very many people advocating for, maybe this is not true, but it seems like the internet is inundated with this person blew up articles and blogs and whatever about this person blew up on TikTok. This person blew up here. This person blew up here. And it's like, well, and, you know, somebody in a interview the other day had asked me such a great question about, do you want to have a one hit wonder or do you want to have, like, longevity? And I'm like, longevity. But I think that artists don't understand, especially this, like, next generation, that how important those 10,000 hours are, and that longevity without that, it's like a weight loss, right? You can't do a quick, you know, fast diet for 48 hours where you eat nothing and then you think you're going to really, like, maintain this, you know, weight loss. It's the same, everything, you know, that's worth holding on to and worth, you know, it has that timeline. You know, you even think about, you know, in my company, we talk a lot about the harvest and how, like, you have to plant seeds, and a farmer mentality understands that you plant the seed, then you have to water it, then it needs the sunshine. You can't, I mean, like, look at everything on the earth, the way that the earth moves. Same thing with a baby. Nobody wants to have their baby early. It's not ready. You know, it takes a certain period to develop it fully and nurture it so that it has this beautiful long life. And that's the same thing with music and anything that you do.
Yeah, no, like, this is the thing. I know there's some, like, well, I think with regards to, like, I think they need to put a few music historians out there, especially over the last sort of, like, this is how this artist did things over the last sort of 30 years, 40 years, just so it gives, like, the up and comers, like, more of an insight to, like, okay, like, remember, like, it's the music business. And, like, you know, like, the whole thing is, look, a number of, look, time immemorial, like, yeah, there's been artists which have come up and, yes, they have been screwed over by, like, some, like, record company along the way. And it's like, oh, yeah, Oh, I've got a $2 million contract. Is I going, yeah, no, it's
and now you owe $10 million. Yeah. You owe your life.
And like, it's like, you're like, okay, what the hell is that? And it's very rare you sort of get artists which sort of crack the code. I remember listening to a Joe Rogan podcast where he had it with Jewel. And it was like, the way she was like talking about how she did it. And it's like, yeah, had great success all of a sudden.
Brilliant.
And it was quite a fascinating story. Like, yes. All I forgot to say is her mother is evil to the nth degree.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
No, basically, yeah,
oh, wow. She
stole a lot of money off of her over the course of time. So it's like, yeah. But she didn't like take the sort of big record deals like and everything like this. She like worked it. So she was like, okay, I get my royalties, I get this, and I have ownership of my masters.
Yes.
And it was like, yeah, I didn't know anything about sort of like owning your masters. Like, I think, what was it? It was like, there's a famous one where Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney were like, yeah, like they were doing, they did a music video together. I can't remember the actual name of the track. Like Paul McCartney was talking about, yes. Oh yeah, like owning people's masters and getting those rights. And it was like, yeah. Yeah, I was like, this person, that person. Michael Jackson nodded, smiled. And then a few years later, the Beatles track, that Masters came up. And Michael Jackson, like, swooped in, took him. And it was just like, Paul McCartney was like, what? But it was just there. It amazed me. And, like, still, when you look at artists who you think are savvy with the game, Taylor Swift, for example.
Yes.
She didn't own her masters, you know.
Right. And they're all gone.
Yeah.
And which it sucks, but it's like I think that actually people are talking about owning your masters more, which I think is really, really good, because it's, you know, I've seen a few friends recently who like, their name isn't on the masters, or it's not on the copyright, or all of those things. And it's like, how devastating to think that somebody owns your art. Like, how is that even a thing? To me, that's that like, doesn't even make sense. Like, how could you own a song that I wrote in my brain? That's incredible. But you're right. You said at the very beginning, this is the music business. So you need to know about the business. You need to know, you know, it's like, there's so much that goes into it. And we live in a time where you don't have to not know. Like in the 90s, people couldn't look up a record contract on the internet and figure out which is bad, which is good, what keywords should you be looking for, all of those things. But nowadays, there's really no excuse. You can inundate yourself with information that you need to know. And it's like these social media platforms can be great. A lot of people on these social media platforms are sharing vital information that an independent artist needs to know about. But I think the root of it is that the independent artist needs to know that they need to know, you know? It's like the kids with the TikTok and the whatever, not that they don't care, but it's like, you have to care. And we have to teach them that they have to care, because it's important. And it's like, you have to know what you want as an artist. What do I want? Whether you're 15, 16, 18, 25, you got to know, what do I want? Do I want a long career? Do I want to make a quick buck? Do I want to, you know, and then you can decide, okay, what information do I need to pursue to make sure I put myself in a position for that, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you, because like, I imagine it must be very hard for like some kid who's like, like going, okay, oh, here's a contract. Look, see that, you see that big figure there? Okay, it's like, it's like,
run away.
Just sign here, and like when you need someone to go, whoa, calm down.
Wait, right. And three, you know what? It's hard to not be excited about things like that. I can attest to that. Is like when a cool, exciting, bright-eyed dream opportunity is in front of you, you do kind of have to catch yourself to say, like, let me, because I'm guilty of rationalizing certain things that are not okay, because the opportunity seems so good. And it's like, hindsight's always 20/20, but you look back on certain opportunities and you're like, why would I not shut that down right there? But it's like, when you're in that situation, especially for these young kids who are 15 and 16, it's like, you know, you need to know what you're talking about, and you need a good supportive team around you who have your best interest.
I hear you. And I can imagine when, like, especially when the goal, like, seems to be so close and like something that just like fingertips away. And like when someone tells you to put your hand in this beehive and all the golden manna from heaven will come your way. It's like, you might get stung a few times.
Are you sure? Times, okay. Yeah, you get stung a few times before you realize, maybe not.
No.
Maybe I'll just go here.
Yeah. So like, was there, like, did you sort of have a sort of situation where someone gave you a, like, here's a contract, sign it, and did you go with it, or did you sort of like go, oh, wait a sec, you were about to, and then you woke up out of the trance?
Yeah, I've had a few opportunities. Some of them I missed the boat on, and I lost a lot before I realized, no, that's not it. And I had to walk away. And other ones I thoroughly read, and I just didn't even go down that road. I had somebody offer me a contract that was like awful. Oh. It was like a subcategory of a major label. And they offered me a contract, and I like made my little cup of coffee and I sat down and I highlighted my contract and I like went through the whole thing, and it was extremely vague. Something that I think is very important for people to know about a contract is that there has to be an end date on it. It can't be an open-ended contract. You can't have like this date to whenever. That, like, no, that cannot be a thing. Same thing with your music. Like, it can't just, because that's how you get yourself in a predicament to say, oh my gosh, I signed away my whole, you know. And that's what was happening in the 90s, is that people were signing these contracts, getting their quick change, and it's like, oh, actually, you owe us 5 studio albums over 20 years. So $2 million over 20 years starts to not look like so much money.
No.
Not in, oh, you're going to owe us if, you know, for breakage, they talk about, there's like, not so much anymore, but there's fees, you know, just these hidden fees we deal with in life. Same thing with a label. They will build certain fees into your contract about, oh, not anymore, but with CDs, there was something like a breakage fee, like, you know, X amount of dollars allotted for when we ship them to the CD stores and they break, you're liable for that. Yeah. So it's like all those little things. Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
And I only know those things because I took a free class from Berkeley about legal contracts with music.
Now, this is like, look, just that sort of little thing there by, okay, yeah, I did a free like contract like course in Berkeley. It just went, all of a sudden, it checked most of it. You must have been shocked and horrified when you sort of had that sort of,
like, what are these things? Class.
Yeah. Oh my God. Because I'm like sitting there like going, breakage fee on CD, like CDs break all the time. You could have one bad shipping incident and like, oh God. Like, when are they doing it at cost price or retail price? On those breaks,
I don't know, but imagine if a whole, you know, thousands of CDs break, and they say, "Well, you don't get paid for that because we had to take it out of our pocket," and it's like, you know,
wow, it is a sneaky, sneaky business, to say the least. Yeah. So, like, with the knowledge you sort of gained over the course of time, now, I take it you must be independent, running around in the streets, as they say, like you and your small team, your plucky band of individuals helping you get by. Like, how has it been as an independent artist out there for you?
It's harder, of course, but it's worthwhile. I think that, you know, I've said, people have always been like, do you want a record deal? And I'm like, if the opportunity presents itself, I would always entertain whatever's in the best interest of the music. But I also think, like, I'm in a position, like, it's so much harder. It's harder to get people on the, you know, it's harder to get people on the phone. It's harder to get radio to play the record. It's harder to do all of those things as an independent, but I'm in charge. I'm the boss. So, like, we know exactly the numbers. We know exactly where the marketing budget dollars go. We know exactly all those things because, like, there is nobody overseeing saying, yeah, yeah, don't worry about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, here's your $12 check, you know, and you're like, what the heck? So I feel like it makes it harder, but it just makes me learn more, study more, be more sharp about the game. So yeah, it's hard to be an independent artist, but it's also extremely rewarding. So
I see. And like with this, like as an independent artist, how productive would you say you've been over the sort of course of your time? Like how many singles have you brought out, albums, if you get what I mean?
Yeah, I so I was putting music out under a different name before, and I put out two records with that whole, but it was a whole different everything. It was a different look, a different name, a different sound, everything. And so we had done two records that way. And I got to a point with my artistry where I was like, it's time to kind of clean the slate, which is hard to do as an artist. You're like, but I got to a place where I had to be really honest with myself and be like, this is not working. Whatever we're doing, I learned, and it's made me great at my artistry. And none of it's wasted because it like brings you to here, right? And it's, you know, that whole overnight success after 10 years, like that's where I'm kind of at right now, right? It's like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, yeah, guys, I've been doing this for a while. But that goes to say that it's like, it's important to put that time in. And I had done all of those things before. People bring up that old music sometimes and I'm like, oh yeah, that was some good stuff. So I'm happy about where we've gotten to with all, you know, all the stuff I put in and all the work and all of that. But
yeah. So like, this is the thing I have to ask, got to, because like, okay, if you were one way beforehand and now you're different, like what was the sort of thing what brought you to that sort of like voyage of discovery, like, you know what, hey, this is me as an artist. And then all of a sudden went, no, that's all.
But I think for myself it was kind of an awakening, right? I was kind of challenged to, with this new music that I was putting out, the last record. Well, first of all, I learned a lot about marketing in the last few years. I really didn't understand how important marketing, especially as an independent artist, marketing your product was like, duh. But I was still under the mindset of, oh, I'm good at music and the music's good and, you know, yeah. And so, but it's like, yes, that's true. But there's 5 million people putting out music. So that was important distinction for me to learn. And then I got to a place where I was like I said, it's not really working. So with this new single Erotici that I just put out, the team that I had worked with challenged me to put that song out, and it was very different. It was a little bit more edgy. It was like a sexier, sleeker kind of look and sound than I was used to. And it was a little, you know, like, I'm very intentional about the music I put out. I think it should have a purpose. I think it should have, you know, inspiration behind it and all of that. So when we got to this song Erotici, I was like, ew, what's that for? You know, but it's like, but seeing that we made music that's in keeping with what the flow of the music is, and it's given me an opportunity to speak, you know, in interviews where I can be more in depth as a person, And it's given me an opportunity to push my own limits, to say, let's push the bounds of my music. Let's push the bounds of my brand. Let's push all of that while still keeping it authentic. Mm. So that's kind of what spurred the whole transformation.
Okay. Yeah, no, like, I like that because, like, this is the thing when, like, it's not so much when we sort of play things safe in life, when we sort of stick to the sort of, how can I say, the well-worn path we've walked time and time again. We start growing at the first, when we walk that path for the first time, the second time, like 10th, 20th time. But when it's like a couple of hundred times down the way, yeah, like the sort of new things, like the sort of growth, like stops, because you're not actually pushing yourself. You're not actually rising to that challenge. And like, this is the thing, I would say, with anything which is a form of art, there has to have that seed of challenge in there. There has to have that sort of realm of discomfort. Like, if you don't have it, all you have is, to be brutally honest, something which is going to be a TV commercial, a jingle, if you get what I mean, rather than sort of like something which is like, going, yeah, you know what? I listened to that and it really moved me, you know?
Right. Right. I think I totally agree with you, is that artists, I know personally a lot of musicians, right? Because that's like my tribe of people who study, you know, really study music. And a lot of them have a chip on their shoulder about how unfair it is that all of these people are having success in the music industry and didn't put the time or the work in, which part of me says, yeah, that's really unfair. It sucks. Like, put me in a room with somebody and give both of us no equipment and I can write a whole song, you know, like, so the fact that it's music industry, yeah, that's unfair, but that's the game. So if you want to be in the game, like, you don't get to show up to a basketball game and say, well, I don't like that rule. Well, I don't want to play by that rule. Like, you know, if I drop it, I get to pick it back up or whatever. It's like, those are the rules. Too bad. And so that's with the music industry. You, not to be harsh, but it's kind of like, get with it or get lost, you know? And I had to go through that myself to say, I had a time where I was like, this is not fair. And I thought, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm here and, you know, whatever. And I had to say to myself, you got to figure out how to play the game while still maintaining what you want to do. And so that's a hard pill to swallow.
No, I hear it.
That's the truth of it.
Yeah. Like, I think it's one of those things where, okay, look, don't get me wrong. Life is just generally not fair. If it was all fair and sunshine, rainbow, gumdrops, everything like this, the world would be a very, very different place. It's not. But it's not. And like, you know, when people like, oh yeah, oh, that person's more successful than me and I don't understand the reason why. Okay, look, you might be judging that person just on the music, right? And you go, okay, like, that person might know someone who's giving them an unfair advantage. That could be a possibility, but that person might have, like, they've got their music skill set, what might not be necessarily that strong, but they've got a hell of a great marketing, like skill set, which a lot of music today is about getting in front of eyeballs, which is marketing. And like, if they haven't really did a deep dive in the whole sort of what that person is all the way through, you're like, you can't really go, you're not going to really be like, compare apples and oranges, you know?
You can't. There's no way.
No. Yeah. And so I think everyone needs to have a reality check and like, go, okay, am I doing as much work as that person in all of these different sectors? Or are they outworking me here and there? And that's making the difference. If they are, can I learn from it and become better, you know?
Yes, definitely. I totally agree with that. I think that, like, I firmly believe that the successful people, you know, that we all love and we follow and we want to be like and whatever, they all have different stories. they all come from different backgrounds. Some are privileged, some have a silver spoon, some come from the streets, some here, some everybody. I mean, look at Hollywood. You have everybody, different everything. And so it's like your differences can't be the thing that makes you set back. Like maybe it's harder because of XYZ. Like as a woman, it is harder in the industry. Does that mean that I should use that as an excuse? Like to me, all those excuses don't get me to where I want to be. So too bad. Too bad if it's harder. Too bad if I scrape my knee 10 times and that person scraped their knee 2 times. And too bad if I fell on my face and embarrassed myself and it was hard. And all of those things affect me, but they never make me be like, you know, that's not fair. I'm not doing this. I wanna do music and I wanna have a great career and I wanna have longevity and I wanna make a lot of money and I wanna do all those things. I wanna, you know, be in charge. And I believe that I can do that. And whatever it takes, I'm gonna do that.
Yeah. Now because I'm there's part of me which is now curious because like this is the thing, you've skilled up across like many different levels, maybe some like areas which are unexpected. But would you say like with regards to your mental mindset, your mental toughness, how has that sort of developed? And was there any sort of techniques or was it just going through the day in, day out grind and bash, which helped you along the way?
I like that question. No one has really asked me that, but the mental toughness is a thing that is a real talk because so many people don't understand how much mental toughness it takes to, you know, like, I think that the phrase, like, don't quit has become so diluted and so like, don't quit and like, put it on a Hallmark card. But it's like, someone said it to me the other day. I was talking to somebody I work, you know, in the music industry with, and I was acknowledging how much they had helped me and how much I appreciated it. And they said, you know, I'm happy that I could help you and assist you where you're going, but you did the work. You didn't quit. You're the one who didn't give up. And if I could tell you all the times I could have given up, we will be here for a very long time. There's so many, you know, and like, that's the thing that nobody can prepare you for. No artist can tell you in an interview that you watch on YouTube and you feel inspired by how to deal with those things. Like it really is, like you said, one step at a time, one blow at a time. Like, luckily, you know, you get, this sounds weird, but you get beat up over time. So you come back a little stronger. And then, you know, like for myself, I have had major losses that have really weighed on my mental like strength. And I always surprised myself to say, yeah, I'm down for a day. Yeah, I'm down for a week. Yeah, I'm down for an hour, but it never stopped me. And I think you have to have that in order to get to where you really want to be. And the only way to have that is every single time something like that happens, you have to be conscious of like, how do I deal with this? How do I push through this one little thing? And then there's going to be another thing. And you say, okay, you know, so many times in a show or in some situation like an interview or something will happen that's totally unexpected all the time in the music industry. Everything is unexpected, right? Like fans can jump on stage and artists can, you know, there's so many variables that are happening. And every single time you have to say, how do I deal with this?
Yeah.
How do I deal with this? How do I deal with this contract that's not right, but it's a great opportunity that I want? How do I deal with that person who's being disrespectful to me, but they are supposed to be part of the team getting me where I'm going? Like there's a lot of really hard decisions and you just have to do them one by one by one. And I spend a lot of time doing a lot of self-development Mm-hmm. And I think personally, that's maybe the only way that I've gotten through it. I meditate every day. I'm very spiritual. I'm very connected to like the higher power, God, universe, all of that energy, I think is where we all come from. We're all connected to. And that's the only way that I can go into my day and say, I'm going to make the best decisions. And it's going to come from the most centered place that I can find.
Mm. Would you say, like, with regard to your sort of spirituality, your faith, like, was that something you, like, you had seen 9 years ago, or is that something you discovered, like, from your journey from being in LA to coming now to New York City? Did you find it along the way, or was it something which has been with you since, it was like, it's plucky teenager Alara.
Yeah, that was me. No, I did grow up in the church. That's really where I kind of started with music, was playing in the church choir, you know, singing in the church choir. I played in the worship band at church. My mom is the church organist. She still is. And like that, that's where my roots are, is just being in church all the time. And I was like kind of a shy kid. I was kind of, I don't want to say outcast, but like, I knew I was good at music, but everything else, you know, I didn't feel very comfortable. And I was like, not the girl going to the parties, none of those things. Church is where I like felt, church and music is where I like felt belonging.
All right. Would you say you were slightly obsessed with music when you were a kid? So it made you a little bit more distant from everyone else?
Maybe. I never really thought about that. That's really interesting that you say that, because I never really thought about that. But now that you say that, thinking back, yeah, we may have an epiphany going on right now. Because I did. I never remember having a friend who like had such a vision for what they were going to do. You know, I'm so thankful for that, because a lot of people still feel like, what am I, you know, what do I actually love and what do I want to do? And a lot of people struggle with that. And I never did. I always knew it was music, but I never had friends that were like obsessed with what they were doing, or, you know, thinking about how they're going to get a record deal at the age of, you know, 13. Like lots of, you know, most kids weren't doing that. I was, you know, in my bedroom, like putting a cassette tape in my alarm clock and then recording it on my 8-track, you know, back and forth as a little kid. So 8-track. Maybe I was kind of a weird kid. I like wanted to, you know, I would sit home and like play with all the instruments, and yeah, I really loved music. Maybe my obsession with music was my friend.
there you go. No, like, this is the thing. I always have a little bit of envy for anyone who's like, not in a bad or malicious way, but it's like, if you've like had that opportunity to go, yeah, this is it. This is what I want to do. Yeah. This is my love and this is my passion. And you found that in your teenage years and like you like ran with it. So many people where like, I think the saddest tale is where someone has actually found that, and then like they just like, oh no, and they step away from it. No. And they've like, you'll find you've always got that sort of that echo of that person in the past where they're like, I was truly happy in that sort of moment. And it's not like life commitments and everything like that. They just walked away from it. And it's just like, that's sort of like, and why did you just do that? But like the vast majority,
a lot of people do. And that's why I'm such an advocate for, like, most people know, if they know me, if they see me in any interview, if they've met me, like, I am a huge advocate for doing what you love and doing it unapologetically, because I think life is way, way, way too short to do a career path because it might have a secure job at the end. It might have a secure income at the end. Like, nothing in life is secure. We can all leave tomorrow. Yeah. So, you know, all of these limiting beliefs of, well, that's safe. And well, you know, it's like, who cares, man? Like, yeah, music has been incredibly hard, and it's not for the faint of heart. Like this career, like I said from the very beginning, I believe that it chose me. And so every step along the way, that's been like, there have been moments where I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to get from here to there. But it's funny, like the grass is always greener, right? Because as a person obsessed with music, which I'm like glad that we like had a aha moment about that. But like, seriously, my obsession with music sometimes made me feel jealous of the person who doesn't care, is okay to just say whatever. And to be honest with you, I don't know if that's really ever true, or if people just suppress that desire of whatever they love. I don't know. Are there people out there who feel like, yeah, I just don't care about anything particular one way or the other? I don't know. Maybe that is a thing. Or do they really love something and they're just too afraid to kind of go there?
Well, like there are people who don't care about anything. Those are sociopaths, but they are few and far between. But
yeah. I don't want to be like them.
No. Stay away, don't find it. Right. But I would say when a far majority of the people who are not sociopaths and like, yeah, just normally like mentally wired, I would imagine it comes down to this. They're like, depending what they were going for or what they fell in love with, but they can't do anymore, that sort of pain, that ache, like they will use that excuse of, I didn't care. Like, it's like when you take a toy away from a kid and they're like, oh, didn't want it, didn't care for it. But you know, deep down, that kid looks at that toy and like, you know, it's like, it irks them. And like the only way I would say they sort of deal with that, and like I would say, yeah, most probably there's part of me which has that vibe as well, which like they deal with that is to like, oh yeah, you know what? No, didn't really care for it. So like to such an extent, you don't feel that sort of that irking pain anymore, right? But still is there, if you get what I mean, you know?
But you know what I have to say to people like that is that there's a pain either way. Mm. My yearning for what I do and what I love is a pain, but I'd rather be in pain wanting to know how to get to the next show or the next interview or the next whatever with my music and feel like I'm stuck between this with my music and this point and I don't know how to get from A to B than the pain of not pursuing my music. And to be honest with you, that has always been the thing that has kept me going. Every time I felt like I'm done, I really can't do this, it is awful. Like there have been some situations that I'm like, I'm done, I don't want to do this. And every single time I'm like, it will hurt so much more for me not to do it. It will hurt my spirit and my soul to not do it.
Yeah. You see, like this is the thing. I would say that sort of stems from a strong why. Like you've got a fuzzy why and a strong why. A fuzzy why, you've got to push that thing, you've got to drag that thing. Like it's like you have to put in 90% of the effort to get it moving.
Yeah.
Strong why, it's like gravity. It pulls you along. You can't help it. You want to stop it, just like, no. I'm gravity, baby. You're coming with me one way.
Totally. I feel like that with music. I'm like, no. And music is like, come on. Mm. I'm either going to hold your hand or you're going to come kicking and screaming, but this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
So I could dig that. I totally know how that is.
Yeah. Now, one of the things which intrigues me with the changing face of music. Now, you're on a podcast with myself. We're having this discussion and everything like this. And now the music like platforms, like, for example, Spotify, iTunes, whatnot, now they're kind of sort of switching away from like the music industry in as a whole. Is it one of those things that you look at and go, okay, podcast long form content is one thing. I'm not saying it from the standpoint of we're the enemy. No. But like the sort of the platforms which are providing the music to people and everything like this, how they sort of change their sort of direction. Is it kind of weird to you they've done this?
Yeah, again, it goes back to the instant gratification, right? Like, people used to buy an album and listen to it cover to cover because it told a story, right? Like, even if you listen to Wu-Tang or any of those guys, like, they have skits between each song. You know, it's a whole storyline that's going on throughout the album. And then you pick your favorite and whatever. Nowadays, it's like the people want to buy their favorite one for 99 cents and, you know, forget the rest of whatever is put out. Alicia Keys has all sorts of stuff that she's put out. I think it was called the B-side, and she has like a whole catalog of music that's incredible that just never got much airplay, but it's like she made all this great, great music as like a body of work, which I love the concept of, because it is art. It is a body of work to me. But you know, with the streaming and everything, again, that's the wave, right? So it's like, I personally am very much enjoying like podcasts and things like that, because I feel like for me in an interview, it allows people to get to know me as an artist more. And then it makes you say, what else does she have? As opposed to, you might not go and buy, nowadays you're not forced to go and buy my whole album. You're forced to, you know, you could buy Erotici and then leave it alone. But if I get to be in a conversation and, you know, talk about things that I have studied and I learned along the way, and people connect to that, then they're going to connect to my music more. So personally, I'm finding that like being able to interview and be in podcasts and vice versa, right? Like somebody that I love, there's so many times that I go and seek out an artist because I see them in an interview and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I really like them as a person. Yeah. I wonder what their music is like. And then I'll go and find them. So I think that there's just like a creative way as an artist that you have to pull people in. It used to be buy this whole album, sit with it. Everybody would listen to it cover to cover and then share their notes at school. Then, you know, like, what'd you think of that album? You know, now that's not really a thing. So it's like, as an artist, you have to be enticing enough that people, you know, really like you and they want to go find more of your stuff because they don't have to anymore. It was kind of like pushed upon that, you know, like you're getting all 12 of these songs.
Yeah.
Even if you just want the single. And now it's like you don't even have to listen to the other 12.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, that is very true. Like, because, like, yes, the sort of consumption is in a different manner. Like, right. I won't lie. Jeez, I can't even remember what was the last album I bought. I think it might have been the Cash album. Just after he died, but it's a very sort that was
last time we all, yeah. All yeah, even myself, like I think the last album I bought was for nostalgia. It wasn't like to buy somebody's whole new record.
Yeah, no, I think it's very much a, that's the hard challenge these days. And I think, like, yeah, like Daft Punk were one of the bands which I think cracked it, like, but I'm going back to sort of like 2004, where they did Interstellar 555.
Yes, yeah.
And they basically just did a whole manga cartoon and then just broke up the manga tracks.
Pieces.
But, yeah. But yep. I can't actually say anyone who's gone to that sort of level since. And, like, you know what I mean? It's a very, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just not really the way that even I don't think that labels are, you know, labels are labels because they know how to play the game. They know the changing elements. And it's like, they know that things are instant gratification. People are having a shorter attention span. We're on our phones. We're this, we're that. Our brain is wiring itself differently. And so, you know, the labels are catering to that, to say, let's put a single out, you know, like Kendrick Lamar with his, what was the name of his last album? Was it wasn't To Pimp a Butterfly, or I forget. But the most recent album that he had, he put out like single for like a year. He dropped like a new single. And then it was like, here's the whole album. But he made, you know, he made you love four singles before he even put the whole project out.
Yeah. Oh, goddamn. Yeah. No, it's crazy. And like, this is the thing. I think they were like, as much as I would say the record labels are savvy about what's going on, I think they're kind of still trying to learn this new world. Like, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like you meant, like we mentioned TikTok, we mentioned like, yeah, different platforms. And like, it's like, okay, what do we do? It's like now.
Well, the label used to have all the power and now they have the money and that's kind of it. Like if you have money and you have a marketing team, you don't. I mean, there's not much besides connections and relationships, which are invaluable. Mm. You might get a great label that, you know, says, hey, we can put you in this position. You know, like, no doubt working with a label could put me in a position much faster because, you know, I might be on Good Morning America tomorrow, which right now it would be much more of a grind for me to get through the door there. So yeah, a label still has that leverage, but it's a lot less than they used to. It's a lot less. You know, you can put a song on TikTok and if the person knows how to sell their song, and you know, I know lots of independent artists who are making great money and they don't need that. And it's like, right, the label can give you a lot of money up front, but then it's like, how much money do you owe on the back end? Or you know, there's all these different things. So
because like this is the thing, like with regards to you, like you teach people how to basically be an artist and not basically be a starving artist. Because like, okay, because in my mind, when I hear, okay, I'm an artist compared to like, yeah, I'm like, how can I say it? I'm like, I'm more of, yeah, a performer. Like, I think artists small, and I think performer large scale, if you get what I mean, doing the
that's
whole tour.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the way I, like, it, there is a difference. And like, because when for a performer, it's like, yeah, you are now amping everything up by a factor of 20, 30, 100, right, depending where you are. And when you're an artist, you're just like, okay, it's me.
I can put, I guess anybody who puts their music up on Spotify is an artist, right?
Yeah.
It's like, have you ever performed in front of anybody? Have you ever been paid for a show? Have you ever, all of those things, you're right, should factor in. Again, like all of these phrases have been so largely diluted by, like, you know, especially in New York City, is like, everybody's PR, everybody's a manager, everybody's an artist. And it's like, it took me a long time to be like, wow, all these people around me, they're so successful and they're doing this. And it's like, no, they're just kind of calling themselves certain titles.
Like, this is the thing. Yeah. In this world of ours where you can like sort of self-proclaim that I'm this, that, the other. Like, it's like, you got to sort of really sort of sometimes take that step back, because like, by all means, there are some people which are very convincing with how they say who, what they are, or what they want to be. But yet, it's like, okay, you look at the actions, and like, if when you really look at the actions, you're like, oh wait, you're a bit of a charlatan, really, not really the sort of real deal. And there could be someone who's maybe a little bit more meek in the corner, and you're like, kind of, you're doing what?
Right. And you know what? It makes me sad because I've been a victim. I don't want to say victim, that's a strong word, but like, I have been on the receiving end of just coming from a background where I take people's word for it. And I kind of used to assume like people are being honest and this and that. Not in this industry. And it's hard because it's like, I hate that for up and coming artists that you're going to have to go through some people who say they do X, Y, Z and they don't. And I think you have to stumble upon enough of those people to be like, okay, wait a second. When you meet somebody, like, okay, cool. You say you're this, this, and this. And like you said, they can come across very convincing, which has happened to me, where somebody will come and approach me and say, oh, you know, let me manage you, or I used to do this, or, you know, like, there's so many people who have actually really worked in the industry, but can't really get you from A to B. You know, it's like, I've had people approach me before about, well, I directed Beyonce's video, or I've done this, or I've, and it's like, maybe they really did do that, but it's like, how that doesn't benefit me going from here to here.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to be really careful as an upcoming artist to be vetting people. And again, you know, I had worked with some people for a long time that I should have walked away from earlier, and was constantly told, well, you just don't know how the music industry works. And as a young woman, kind of out there by myself trying to figure it out, it was like, I always felt like, well, yeah, they're right. I don't know exactly how it works. And I don't know how, you know, like, so when you have people telling you, well, just do this and just do that, and you're going to have to do this and look like that and whatever, and then telling you on the back end, planting that seed of doubt, like, well, you just don't know how it has to work. It has to work like this. And you just don't know. And then you say to yourself, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So that could be really dangerous to an independent artist, which is why I constantly encourage people, like, do your homework. And I've done a lot of my homework and still fallen into that trap.
Yeah, like, this is the thing. I think a lot of people manage to sell the cookie cutter, if you get
it. Yes.
And like, when you like get that sort of spill, because look, the cookie cutter, it like, you like, okay, yeah, here's the cookie cutter. Oh, this is how this person was successful, blah, 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 blah. And you go, right. And you, if you fall into that sort of trance of the cookie cutter, because like, a cookie looks ever so tasty. Oh, a cookie cutter, right. Oh, ever so sweet. Yeah. But you might not be the person what likes a particular brand of cookie, which is being presented to you. And like, trying to like find, like, well, construct your, like, and I wouldn't say cookie cutter, but like, what type of cookie you might be. It might be a gingerbread man cookie. It might be a house cookie. It might be a conventional round cookie. But without that sort of like, people whispering in your ear, putting that doubt and going, this is what you should be, it is difficult. But like, finding out who you truly are, and like, I would say anyone who I think wants to go down this sort of pathway needs to have some long, hard looks and sort of really have those conversations with themselves to go, okay, who am I as a person? Okay, right. Because many times they go, who am I as an artist? But they should be asking, who am I as a person?
And that's like, really good.
Yeah. You said this yourself. And like, it's like a case of, yeah, who am I as a person? And then that's the thing what defines who you are as an artist.
Yes, it should. It should be, because if you, that's perfectly said, because if you define yourself as an artist before yourself as a person, it's like, there's no foundation to the house, right? Yeah. It's like, what are you building that on? You know, you're building it on what other people are like, or what other people act like, or what you think the music industry wants, and all of these things. And it's like, honestly, at the end of the day, none of those things will make you happy. Like, all of that money, all of the success, being recognized, all of those things like are cool. But, you know, for me, it's like, I want to have an artist career that's memorable because it makes an impact, or because people feel more knowledgeable or feel better prepared, or like, that's what I want people to get from an interaction with me, because that's who I am as a person. And that's what my artistry has become shaped around, right? Like, before, you were asking me, you know, what was that switch for you? Yeah. And it's like, I was afraid to make that switch because I felt like it was not genuine. But then when I did it, I was like, actually, this is a more authentic version of myself. I'm really being myself through my artistry. I think you said something about playing it safe. And it's like, you think, oh, you know, I'm better, or I'm this, or I'm that. And it's like, actually, you're just playing it safe. You're afraid to step outside the box. You're afraid to be judged mm-hmm. by what you look like, or what, you know, like, I come from a small town. And so you get this mentality of like, oh, you know, what if they don't like it? And what, and then it's like, you know, last week I was on an interview in Uganda, and then Scotland, and then, you know, with the UK. And it's like, there's a bright big world out there, you know who you are, and do it unapologetically, you know?
Yeah. Knowing who you are, doing it unapologetically. Yes. Pushing yourself forward. Like, I'm curious to know, like, over the, like, where do you want to sort of like take this journey of yours over the next few years or so? What direction would you like it to be?
I think that, you know, it's blossoming into like a whole bigger thing than I kind of had thought. Again, I always thought like very close-minded about it has to happen this way, and I have to do this, and, you know, I'm been studying music and this and this and this. And now I feel like, you know, my company is Love Light Sound Music, mm-hmm. and we have all sorts of courses, and I run workshops, and I run empowerment groups for kids, and I work with creative people. And of course, like, there will be ups and downs in my career where it's like, I have the time to do that. And then, you know, we're on tour and busy, busy, busy. But when I do have the time to do that, I love it. I love working with people. I love chatting with people. I love doing interviews. So, I mean, over the next few years, I just really want to see my company grow. I want to see myself grow and blossom as an artist, and be able to, you know, I've always kind of wanted to be on this certain level with my artistry, not for any other reason, except that I want to be in the room with a Prince. I want to be in the room with Questlove and all these, you know, brilliant musicians, Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak and Dr. Dre and all of these incredibly brilliant and talented people. I just want to work with. I want to be in the same room with Alicia Keys. I want to do a show with her. And it's going to require me to get to a certain level to partake in those things, which is why I've always pushed so hard. But like, I'm loving the journey. I'm loving learning, you know, oh, I could teach a course and it could be really successful because I have, you know, a lot of study information over the last 9 years, you know, plus all the years I studied music before that. So I look forward to the company growing and more courses and working with more people. You know, this year I'm going to put out a whole album. I'm going to put out another single in the spring. I'm just loving it. I'm loving learning about myself as an artist and pushing myself a little bit more out of my comfort zone. Like, try that, or write with this person who's a number one Billboard artist, or, you know, like, I love all of these things that elevate me as a person, as an artist, as a businesswoman, all of them. It's really neat. It's been fun.
Yeah, I'm loving that. Now, like, this is the thing. Here comes the Sophie Choice part of it. Now.
Uh-oh. I have to make a choice.
Artist or businesswoman? Which one?
I don't think I have to choose. And for a long time, I thought that I had to choose, which was like Sophie's Choice. Like, such a hard, like, I love this, but I love this. And it was like, well, I had this epiphany, like, oh, I can do both, you know, like, I can be an independent artist. And, you know, I have people call my like office phone number all the time. And they get my assistant Savannah, and they're like, you know, is this a record company? And then we're like, well, not yet, but actually call us back in a year. Because I see that being the direction. And like, I think that, you know, especially nowadays, again, back 10, 20 years ago, being an artist and doing other things was like frowned upon. It was like, you can't be that serious about your artistry if you do a course or you teach or you do this. Nowadays, I'm finding so many people like I admire and respect, Christina Aguilera, Alicia Keys, Oprah, all these people are launching courses and they're sharing their knowledge and they're working with people and they're doing all those things. And they're still really great at what they do. Like Alicia Keys teaching a course on singing and producing, which I also have that course, not exactly the same, but like her doing that doesn't take away from the incredible artist that she is. Yes. And I used to be like afraid of that. Like people won't respect me because I have a company and I teach and I consult and I do those things and my artistry. People won't respect my artistry. And now I feel like, who cares? I feel like I'm good at this and I'm good at this. Why should I not do both? Because I'm worried that other people, that's the whole stepping into unapologetically, like, no, I can be good at both and I want to do both. So I'm going to do both.
Okay. Hey, look, props to you. Like, look, I am curious. Like, okay, you've mentioned the Alicia Keys a couple of times. Now, if you could, like, anyone through like time and space to sit down and like just have a jam session, piano, violin, just like having a jam session, small room, small audience, and just riffing, who would you love to riff with?
Oh gosh, that's so hard. Alive or dead, or do they have to be alive still?
Alive or dead, time, space,
I would have loved to work with Prince. I would have not worked with him. I would have sat in the corner and been like, let me watch, you know. But I would have loved to work with Prince. I would have loved to work with Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, all of those people. I still hope that I'll get a chance to work with Lionel Richie in my lifetime. I think that he's brilliant. Quincy Jones, I would love to participate. Like, I love the way that they direct and move a room and they really know all the working pieces. I love that. Alicia Keys would be a number one. I think we would be friends. Like, I think we have a similar energy. Maybe that's in my mind. like, we're friends.
Yeah, like, I'm going know. Up to her and saying that.
Yeah, right. Lady Gaga. I would love to work with Lady Gaga. I think she's brilliant and talented and really, I love the way she has foraged a path for herself to say, she's a perfect example to say, I can wear crazy outfits and I can be extravagant and show up to the awards in an egg and all of these crazy things that she did and be like, actually, I'm really, really talented. Actually, I'm really, really smart. And actually, I'm a businesswoman. And I think I admire that so much. I really love the way that she has unapologetically been like, I'm really good at this and I deserve a space. And, I think she's a great example and great role model. I would love to work with her. There's a whole list of them. I could keep going.
I'm sure you could.
Yeah, I could. I always hope like maybe someday they'll hear these interviews and be like, oh, hey. Like,
you never know. I'm working on that. I'm working at
getting
right. Laura, yeah. Right. I was like, yeah, Laura Lovelight. Yeah, she was a great artist. Yeah, you should have her on. Hey, you never know. Got to say, yeah, fantastic. Look, we're coming to the end of our time. This is the thing. Now, with my final question, with regards to your new single, how long did it take you to get, like, put this all together?
I just saw, like, on social media that I had recorded Erotici a year ago, like, this week I recorded it. And it was pretty, like, from conception to everything being made was pretty quick. We wrote the song in one writing session in the evening it was like one, you know, we ended up talking about this. I wrote it with Ray Rothschild, who is formerly Sugar Ray of Double X Posse, and they had a lot of big hits in the 90s. And so his writing skills are crazy, really, really talented. And so we ended up writing it real quick. We went to the studio with it probably 2 weeks after that. And then I would say after that, it was like, oh, I guess it's time to make music video. So I spent about 4 to 6 weeks planning the music video, planning the outfits, planning the locations, planning all of that. And then we shot it in 24 hours. We did the whole, which I won't do again. That was a lot of work. I didn't know. I was very ambitious. Like, oh, everybody's here. Great. Let's just shoot like all the shots. And it's like, we're tired.
Yeah. You have a team.
It was like 3 in the morning and my makeup girl was like, I have to go to bed. I'm sorry. She's like, just make sure I'm right and then go to bed.
You look beautiful. But, you look beautiful. That's a yucca plant over there. Ah, sorry. Yeah, there you go. brilliant. So where can you find your like this track of yours?
Yes, Erotici is everywhere. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon. You can find it on my website, lovelightsoundmusic.com. And if you Google Erotici by Laura Lovelight, probably gonna find it. Yeah, it's on TikTok, it's on Instagram, it's on YouTube, it's on Facebook, it's, you know, all the places.
Perfect. Laura, I've got to say thank you for coming on today. You have been an absolute superstar. Yes, like I'm like, you know what, I don't know, like you might be like, yeah, non-stop.
Like, I love it. I love all of it. So it's like hard for me to stop because I'm like, I'm tired, but I'm also want to do this and want to do that. And yeah, it's fun.
Perfect. Yes, I'll put all of the information down in the show notes so you can track her down. Yeah, maybe warn Alicia Keys. She might be like, yeah, she might have a potential there. Yeah. Or a new bestie she doesn't know about, but nevertheless. Right. You're my bestie. Okay. But I'd like to say thank you to you, Laura. Thank you very much for coming on today. And hey, I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors, for coming on, listening to us, sticking with us to this point, to the end of the show. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world and then some. Have a great day, guys. Yes. Peace. Yeah. And we are.